Canva.
6 years ago, Nick and I were designing the pitch deck for our media company.
Yeah, we didn't want it to look like some amateur college PowerPoint. We wanted to impress investors. So we made our first pitch deck on Canva.
Canva is the easy-to-use online design platform for presentations, social media posts, physical flyers, anything you can design.
Canva turns you into a digital Da Vinci, delighting your audience with design.
They got these color palettes that you can use. It makes your work look beautiful.
We used presentation templates that were available for free and then customized them for our company.
And guess what? That summer, we sold that company, Market Snacks, thanks to the deck we built with Canva.
Oh, and funny thing, we still use Canva today for all our design projects.
So Yetis, start designing today at canva.com.
Canva, designed for work.
This podcast is supported by FedEx.
FedEx offers picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday.
See the FedEx service guide for delivery information.
FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business.
Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Airbnb.
I hosted on Airbnb 9 years ago for the first time, but I'm doing it again this year because I got a trip to France in the summer and a trip to the tropics over Christmas.
All right, Jack, besides those humble brags, both of those trips, what are you going to do with your place, man? What are you doing with it?
For both of those trips, I'm putting my place on Airbnb.
Because now there's an obvious benefit to hosting on Airbnb. It's financial.
I'm putting the money from my Airbnb revenue towards my plane tickets for both of those flights.
All right, so it's incredible. Instead of your place just sitting empty while you're on vacation, you're going to earn a little extra money while you're away. It's a win-win.
Truly. And setting my schedule as a host on Airbnb is so convenient. Airbnb has easy-to-use features that allow me to update my calendar, so I host exactly when I want to host.
Yeah, it is. If you live somewhere you already have an Airbnb, Airbnb it.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And this is Snacks Daily. It is Thursday, August 20th.
Snackers, this is the best one yet, and our first story is insane.
T-B-O-Y. Jack, what do we got? First story.
Apple is the first company ever to hit a $2 trillion valuation.
Mazel tov. Nice job.
The S&P 500 just hit a record high yesterday.
Oh, not too shabby. Looking good over there.
And Death Valley, California just hit 130 degrees Fahrenheit.
We're going to focus on the first two because we found three reasons why stocks are living their best lives while the rest of the economy is kind of sick.
For our second story, Impossible Foods is the top rival to Beyond Meat, and it just raised $200 million in fresh funding.
Unicorn of the day over here. Now it's taken the opposite strategy of its publicly traded rival. It's opposite day. We're checking it out. Third and final story?
For our third and final story, General Motors is tired of feeling so general.
Yeah, it's a very vague term. So it wants to be potentially split into two different companies. Jack, the honors.
A Boomer GM.
Okay.
And a Gen Z.
Oh yeah, we got names for both those ones. But before we jump into all that good stuff, Snackers, full disclosure, Jack and I, 1988 babies.
And fuller disclosure, Snackers, from 1992 to the year 2000, I was wearing 16 Husky and munching on Dunkaroos every day after school.
Jack actually had his own personal food pyramid. Now, the reason we wanted to focus on this is that Dunkaroos aren't just a classic throwback. They are one of the great food business mysteries of all time.
Gen Z, you got to listen up because you weren't even alive for this. It was a tub of vanilla frosting.
Yes.
And then you dunk a cookie into that frosting, and it was marketed as like a healthy after school snack.
Sometimes you used a finger, sometimes the dunking thing. Doesn't matter. Turquoise was big back then.
And the Dunkaroos logo was a vaguely offensive thing in Australia because it was like this active kangaroo with like a headband and sunglasses.
Yeah, it was like doing athleisure before that was a thing. Now, sales started declining in the mid-1990s because new regulations said, you know, you couldn't market this directly to 8-year-olds.
They're basically like, if the food content is 140% added sugar,
yeah. You
need to put it on the top shelf so the children can't even see it in the grocery store.
So Dunkaroos got discontinued in the U.S. in 2012, but then were strangely still sold in Canada by General Mills.
And naturally, when something's available north of the border and illegal south of the border, a little slot in the Customs and Border Control right around Vermont and Canada forms, and Dunkaroos flowed south into the States.
People began smuggling the calories across the border until they disappeared from Canada in 2018.
Okay, so then we had a two-year drought from 2018 until today with no Dunkaroos nationwide, borderline worldwide.
But then Jack and I noticed this summer, Dunkaroos magically returned. They hit 7-Eleven store shelves for the first time.
The high fructose corn syrup is back, baby.
Snackers, return to Dunkaroos, officially the best thing to happen in 2020, but it took something from the 1990s.
Let's hit our three stories.
You're tuned into Snacks Daily. We spoke to the lawyers and we gotta get something legal out the way. The snacks about to hear ain't food, it's ear candy. They don't reflect the views of the Robin Hood family. It's all informational, just so you know. We're not recommending any securities. Nope. It's not a research report or investment advice. Not an offer or sale of a security. Right. Snacks is digestible. Business news for you. Robin Hood Financial, LLC. Member FINRA /SIPC.
For our first story, we just hit a milestone moment. Actually, a few of them.
The S&P 500 hit an all-time record high in the middle of a global pandemic and the worst economic crisis in a century.
The stock market right now, it's kind of like your buddy Timmy's Instagram. It's living the glam flamingo float lifestyle in like a Montauk pool.
Definitely sipping on some kind of alcoholic seltzer. And then the real life for everyone else is like another Friday night on your couch.
Yep.
Frozen pizza.
Yes.
Same frozen pizza, same sweatpants.
Getting texts from Timmy to come out. Now, the S&P 500 is like a giant scoreboard for the entire stock market. That's how you got to think.
And there are 500 players in this game, which are the 500 most valuable publicly traded companies in the United States.
And that one number, the S&P 500 index's number that we get to see every day, it is a weighted average of all 500 of those stock prices.
Now, during the peak COVID-19 freakout, the S&P 500 was falling like 10% per day.
Yeah.
And hit a low down 34%.
But since March 23rd, when things were really ugly, the S&P 500 is now up 50% since then.
Since March 23rd, it has been a steady climb to the top of the mountain with no backtrack.
Now we're at the top of the mountain, and yesterday we closed at a record high for the index.
Snackers, we need to emphasize this. Stock prices have literally never been higher than right now.
Which means, Jack, we should probably do like an economic pulse check here. How's the rest of things going in the economy?
COVID-19 is ravaging the earth.
Okay.
America's GDP is down 33%.
That's true.
Our unemployment is worse than like decades.
10%.
And we have no vaccine for it.
No, we don't. Winter, by the way, Snackers, like literally coming. Not some kind of 2019 joke with Game of Thrones.
So Nick and I put our heads together and we have three reasons to try to bring sense to this disconnect between the stock market and the economy.
Disconnect is like the least we could say on this. The S&P 500 at a record high. Everything else feels depression-ish.
All right. The first reason, most of the Corona economy losers we've talked about on this pod are not publicly traded stocks, so have no impact on the S&P 500.
Your go-to local burrito joint around the corner next to the bodega could be going bankrupt.
But that is not going to affect the S&P 500 because Taqueria Cancun is a private company owned by literally mom and pop.
And unfortunately, mom and pop's loss is Chipotle's gain.
And Chipotle's gain means the S&P 500 is actually going to climb because of these burrito bankruptcies.
All right, so the first is that you don't have like a publicly traded mom and pop situation go on. But the second is that there are trillions of free money being handed out by the government.
All the airlines got a bailout.
Yep.
The unemployed got an extra $600 every week on top of what the states were giving out.
Yes, they did.
Plus, small businesses could apply for PPP grants.
Evictions have been banned and student loans have been reprieved.
And then America's central bank stepped in, which is basically the watchful guardian Bruce Wayne style for the whole economy.
Fed Chair Jerry Powell. Huge Batman fan.
Thanks to the Fed stimulus efforts, if you need money in this economy, it's probably available at like 0% interest from some rescue program.
So we got the mom and shop pop problem. We got trillions of free money. Jack, for the third and final reason, let's just go to the takeaway.
Nick, am I allowed to say the takeaway without whip up the takeaway?
I didn't set you up as we typically would, but I feel like this is a takeaway moment.
The S&P 500 should rename itself.
Yes.
It's really the Tech 5. And the other 495.
Snackers, the five big tech companies represent a whopping 20% of the stock market's total worth right now.
You got to go back to 1950 to a time in America when one industry dominated the stock market like it is now.
We actually don't know what that industry is, but we're guessing it was like rail, steel, or oil, something hard.
I think Pittsburgh and Detroit were big in the 1950s.
Now, the S&P 500 is weighted based on a company's market cap, its value in the market, and tech is like really heavy right now.
Yeah. When Apple's stock price moves, the S&P 500 moves a lot because Apple just became the first company ever to be worth $2 trillion.
That happened yesterday, right when this S&P 500 high kicked in.
And look at Apple's compadres, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Facebook. Those are the five biggest publicly traded companies in America by far.
Their stocks rose 37% in the first 7 months of 2020, just those first five.
And the other 495 companies in the S&P 500, they are down 6% this year.
So the S&P 500 is at a record right now, but without those five tech stocks, it's not even close to a record. For our second story, Impossible Foods, the plant-based meat company, raised another whopping $200 million.
Now we finally see the strategic difference between Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods.
Finally. Now this company, Snackers, founded in 2011, they've gone through a hefty 12 rounds of fundraising at this point.
They're on like their Series L, and their initial investors were Jay-Z, Serena Williams, Katy Perry, pretty much the whole A-list crowd.
Yeah, to round alpha, gamma, beta. They're going to the Greek stuff next.
Now, 9 years later, they have raised a total of $1.5 billion to scale this business. But their latest investors are pretty much just the sharks on Wall Street.
Little less Z100, little more
Brooks Brothers.
But here's the thing Jack and I find fascinating about the $1.5 billion Impossible has raised over 9 years.
Half of that money came in 2020, this year.
Yeah, that's like new stuff they got going on.
This company is in overdrive. The Impossible Foods moves from the past 2 months are insane.
This is wild, Snackers. Here's what Impossible Foods has been up to while you haven't been up to that much.
If you're nervous to try your first plant-based meat burger?
Yeah, maybe you are.
They partnered up with Starbucks and Burger King because it pairs really nicely with a latte or a Sprite.
If you're still nervous about trying something plant-based, they partnered up with a company called Home Chef to do Impossible plant-based meal kits.
You can whip up the takeaways right at home with Impossible Foods.
Wanted to try it at a restaurant, but restaurants are closed? Boom, they launched at Trader Joe's, Walmart, and Publix grocery stores.
Can't find your N95 mask? They launched a direct-to-consumer e-commerce setup at impossiblefoods.eat so you can get it shipped right to your home.
Kind of feels like we should issue a restraining order against Impossible Foods. They're trying to meet you everywhere you happen to be.
Speaking of trying, do you want to try out Impossible stock?
No.
Unfortunately, Impossible is still a sumo stock.
Straight up missing out private company.
They still haven't IPO'd after 9 years, so unless you're Jay-Z, Serena Williams, or Katy Perry, or one of those sharks, you're sumo.
The theme here, though, Snackers, distribution.
Well, Impossible made an impossible pivot because COVID-19 upside down their business.
Yeah, back in the day, you wanted to try Impossible's Impossible Burger, you were going to like Bear Burger in Greenwich Village if you wanted to actually get it.
They were pretty much only available in restaurants. In fact, back in March, there were only 150 grocery stores nationwide that carried Impossible Foods like ground meat so you could make your own burger.
So COVID-19 killed Impossible's restaurant sales. So Jack and I noticed they've shifted basically everything to grocery stores.
They basically ripped off the shipping label that was sending it to like a bunch of restaurants slapped on like Fairway, Safeway, Publix, Kroger.
Now Impossible is in 9,000 grocery stores. Jack, can we do the math on this one? No lifts included.
They 60X'd their presence in grocery stores in just 5 months, Nicholas.
Impossibly fast pivot. So Jack, what's the takeaway for our buddies who are just doing a lot of things right now over at Impossible?
Beyond Meat and Impossible are now betting on two opposite strategies for their plant-based meat.
Snackers, we got a duopoly situation here. First, Beyond Meat. Jack, their strategy.
They're focused on one product, which is faux meat, but pursuing broad geographic expansion worldwide.
They got a new factory in China. They got a new factory in the Netherlands. They're in 3,300 Starbucks in China. They're everywhere.
Apparently, Impossible doesn't have a passport.
No.
Because it's pursuing multiple products, but focusing entirely in the United States.
Great quote we found here from the CFO. Their mission is to create plant-based upgrades. We love that they said upgrades.
I love that they said upgrades.
For every major category of animal-derived food products.
First, it was beef. Next month, they're launching plant-based sausage.
And next, now that Impossible has another $200 million in fresh cash, they're launching pork and plant-based steak and plant-based milk.
They might as well acquire Oatly, Nick, and I'm assuming next on their list is eggs, cheese, and fish.
Snackers, when you're looking at the plant-based industry, Beyond's going broad, Impossible's going deep. For our third and final story, this is kind of wild. General Motors might split up the General from the Motors.
And the idea of divorcing GM into two separate companies could make the stock worth more.
Conscious uncoupling here. Now, General Motors, Jack, we should actually, let's bring out the whiteboard over here. General Motors is trying to do everything.
We got a classic do less message that we need to scream to the executives in Detroit.
Do less, GM. We're looking at your numbers right now. Jack, they got four brands.
Chevrolet, GMC, Buick, Cadillac.
Jack, they got three motors.
Gas powered, electric powered, and a hybrid in between.
Jack, they've got two drivers.
Homo sapien drivers and robotic drivers. We're talking self-driving.
But we also noticed that GM has one analyst issue, and that's an analyst who says it's time to stop doing everything and just focus on one thing.
General Motors is basically the double major playing like three sports, also trying to learn Latin for some reason, because that's going to be useful.
Yeah. Lauren, you don't need to do all that. You're not proving anything.
Investment banking analysts have now officially started pressuring the 111-year-old Detroit car company to split into two companies.
So Jack and I got to like Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn this thing. We're just a couple of divorce lawyers.
If you want to throw us a couple frequent flyer miles, we'll take a couple frequent flyer miles.
We can help you out, General Motors. Now, if the company gets split into two, it'd be like really easy to decide what's actually going where.
Nick, it is such a clear decision on how to split this company up.
Clean slate. You got the old company, which you could honestly just call General.
Yeah. General has trucks and SUVs, gas-powered cars, and the headquarters will definitely be in Detroit.
And then you could have this new company, and you could just call that Motors.
All electric, self-driving everything with the headquarters in San Francisco.
Or you could call one of them General Motors and one of them Specific Motors. There are like a lot of options here.
That would work too. Now, if you split GM's assets up, just like we just described, it would be a very clean breakup.
Plus, here's what's so interesting. This could actually unlock new value for both the new company and the old General Motors.
Analysts at Deutsche Bank and Morgan Stanley have both recently predicted that GM's market value could rise from today, where it's $40 billion to $100 billion after the split.
And Snackers, Jack and I have seen this before. You saw eBay split up with PayPal, and then Marlboro actually used to be owned by Kraft Foods.
Now, actually, Nick,
yeah, I know what you're thinking.
Kraft single American cheese has a lot in common with Marlboro cigarettes, now that you mentioned
it. They say it's the cigarette of the lower intestine, Jack.
Now, some companies just are worth more separated.
And GM CEO just said that all options, this is a direct quote, are on the table.
The sum of the parts is more than the sum of the combined.
Something like that. So the stock jumped 7% on Monday. So Jack, what's the takeaway for our buddies over at GM?
General Motors stock is a product too, and customers just don't want it.
Yeah, Snackers, the most valuable stocks are those where people want to own a piece of the company.
Yeah, we're talking about investors, and General Motors is trying to target every type of investor, and that's a strategy that just doesn't work.
Yeah, it just gets too confusing. Half of its business is like dirty, huge old school trucks and SUVs.
The other half is futuristic, clean self-driving tech.
It's like a smoothie that's part pork belly and part like flaxseed acai.
Pork belly, good. Flaxseed acai, good. Pork belly and flaxseed acai, not good.
No. Only people drinking that are like in LA.
Not that many investors on Wall Street want the ham-handed investment smoothie that is General Motors.
But there are tons of customers who want a gas-guzzling SUV stock.
And a ton of other customers who want a self-driving electric car stock.
Jack, can you whip up the takeaways for us over there?
The stock market is at a record high, but that's mostly thanks to just five tech companies.
The economy's hurting really bad, but that hasn't translated to stocks yet.
Second story, Impossible Foods is still a sumo stock.
Straight up missing out.
But it's finally clarified how it is different from Beyond Meat.
Beyond's going broad geographically. Impossible's going deep.
For our third story, General Motors is under pressure to divorce itself.
The sum of General and Motors might be more than General Motors.
Exactly.
Now, time for our snack fact of the day. This one sent in by Steve Rapepi at the University of Dayton. Lovely.
All right. Michelle Obama fought real hard from 08 to 16 to improve kids' nutrition in America.
Classic. The lawyers over at Big Pizza found a little bit of a loophole going on in there.
Yeah, they determined that 2 tablespoons of tomato sauce technically qualifies as a vegetable.
So then the R&D department over at Big Pizza got a couple emails and decided to change the recipe for pizza.
Since then, guess how many tablespoons of tomato sauce have been in kids' cafeteria-style pizza?
They're just nailing it. The kids are having too tablespoons.
Now, before we head out, we want to give a quick happy birthday to Anouk in Cypress, California,
and Martina Montemora in Milan, Italy,
and Zach out in Malaysia,
and Tina Young in Irvine, California,
Emily, a snacker in Tecumseh, Michigan,
and happy birthday, Elizabeth in Santa Barbara, California,
Leah Moriani, happy 10th out in San Antonio,
and happy engagement to Happy Musanda, first name Happy, just went down outside the Milwaukee Art Museum.
Snackers, for a shout out, check out the link to a Google form right in the episode of this podcast and you'll get on the pod.
It's right there. In the meantime, tell all your friends HYHYSD.
Have you had your snacks daily?
We'll see you tomorrow.
This is Jack. I own stock of Beyond Meat and so does Nick. Nick owns stock of Chipotle. Nick owns stock of Apple and I own stock of Amazon.
If you know, you know. The Robin Hood Snacks podcast you just heard reflects the opinions of only the hosts who are associated persons of Robin Hood Financial LLC and does not reflect the views of Robin Hood Markets Inc. or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to serve as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of a security. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to serve as the basis of any investment decision. Robinhood Financial, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC.
If you like The Best One Yet, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
And before you go, tell us a little bit about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
We want to get to know you.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.